want to take this opportunity not only to welcome everyone, but also to acknowledge the coordinating and sponsoring organizations. It is our privilege at Shomrei to be hosting this year, and we are also part of one of the partners of the Kol Yom Rishon program. But part of the beauty of the program is that it is a collaborative effort, not only with the resource of the talent of the Rosh Yeshiva coming from Yeshiva University, but locally it is a collaborative effort not only between Shomrei as well as two other shuls, B'nai Jacob Shari Zayin and Suburban Orthodox, but also with Yeshiva Rambam. In this vein, I want to thank not only all of our partners, but in particular single out the coordinator locally for the program, Rabbi Azir Pozzi, who wears two hats, one of which is that he works for us here in the shul, and we're very proud of all the good work that he does in the community, and in particular, not only his work with the teens at Rambam, but also his work in the shul, and that has been an ability to help bring this program to Baltimore in the past, as well as this morning here in Shomrei. I want to also call your attention to Rabbi Pozzi, if you could just raise your hand. Rabbi Pozzi has just, for those who are interested, if you're not a member of any of the three shuls, and you may not see this in a bulletin or something, if you're interested in future programs, which we do hope to have on a monthly basis, Rabbi Pozzi just told me that we're hoping that next month Rav Goldwicht will be coming to town. Those of you who, Goldwicht has been here before, in Baltimore before my time, but I know he's been here, and he's a beloved personality in Magid Shir, and certainly you won't want to miss it. So if you're interested in having an update and finding out about Shurim, if you give your email address to Rabbi Pozzi, he'll be happy to put you on a mailing list. I want to introduce Rav Schachter and the topic with the following very brief introduction. I imagine that there's a combination of two reasons, and it's really the combination of the two, which makes this such an important lecture, and that is that there's two reasons why, Baruch Hashem, so many of you have come out this morning to hear the shiur. Number one is, of course, because of who our guest speaker is. Rav Schachter is not a stranger to Baltimore, not a stranger to our shul, and certainly needs no introduction. It is certainly a great zechus. I'm a lot less nervous introducing him than I was saying a shiur in front of him. I'm happy that I was yotze that b'shalom, and therefore I hope that he'll be mochel me on the introduction as well. But it is a great, great zechus for me and for the shul and for the entire community to have Rav Schachter here in the community, and I know that because of his widespread and well-earned reputation, that is why so many of you are here. But there's another reason, and that is, of course, because of the urgency and the pain and the importance of the topic that he is speaking about, and that is the issue of the contemporary aguna. Those of you who have been in shul know that I have spoken about this before. Unfortunately, to my knowledge, at the current time, we have two tragic cases of aguna in the greater Baltimore community. We have done so far as much as we can, and it has not been enough because it has not been successful. We've had rallies, we've had other things, and people in the shul have heard me urge people to go, and I've made the point, to me it's self-evident, that this is a tremendous blight on the Frum community, Chil Hashem, where halacha itself has been taken hostage. It means that it was never intended, and it's a very, very painful topic, not only for the most obvious reasons for the women that it directly affects, but additionally because of the terrible black eye that it gives orthodoxy in the Torah and halacha. While there does not yet seem to be any silver bullets or magical solutions to take care of all scenarios, there have been many, and sometimes they don't get enough credit, but many dedicated, sensitive, you know, caring rabbonim who have been working in various capacities over the years to ameliorate this situation, some on an individual case-by-case basis, and others in the most general sense as a problem, confronting the problem on the whole. One of the rabbanim who has been most sensitive and most dedicated to doing whatever he can do and can be done on this topic is our guest, Rav Herschel Schachter, and therefore to have him speak about this topic is certainly something beautiful. I just want to conclude by mentioning that even though ostensibly and on the surface there is no connection between this topic and the holiday of Hanukkah, on a deeper level perhaps there may be. And that is in light of the famous comments of the Rambam, who discusses someone who unfortunately is of such limited means that can only afford candles or oil for Shabbos candles or for Hanukkah candles, but not both. So what should you do, says the Rambam. The Rambam teaches us, this is well-known halacha, that if you have to choose, we choose Shabbos candles. why you'll say Shabbos is more kadosh than Hanukkah. That's not what the Rambam says. The Rambam says because, as we know, Shabbos candles, one of their purposes and one of their great symbols is of shalom bayis, is of harmony, which has many connotations, but certainly the most well-known one is a marital harmony, a harmony in the Jewish home. And shalom bayis is adif. Shalom bayis trumps even something as important as Hanukkah candles. One of the great challenges that we as a community, Rabbanim, have is the different forms of shalom bayis problems in our community and in our generation. If the Rambam, in the context of Hanukkah, chooses and takes the opportunity to highlight for us just how important shalom bayis is, then I think it is certainly appropriate that on this festival of lights, when so many of us are happy and so many of us are enjoying our families, our nuclear family, our extended family that we may have been together for Shabbos Hanukkah, it certainly behooves us who are so happy and so fortunate to take a few moments and to consider the fact that unfortunately there are those whose families have been broken and shattered and don't have any shalom bayis, to remember how important that is, to remind us that we cannot rest, we must be vigilant in all cases, especially cases that we know of and that are local, and to support those efforts by Rabbanim nationally and locally to try to ameliorate this problem. One of those efforts, raising consciousness and educating us about the problem and potential solutions, is the shiur this morning. Without further ado, it is our great kavod to introduce Harav Herschel Shaffer.
Thank you very much. The term aguna was always used as a technical term for many centuries to mean a woman whose husband was missing. The husband went on a trip and the boat disappeared, or the airplane disappeared, or the husband was in the war, in the army, and he never came back. They don't know whether he's alive or dead. And the longest siman in all of Shulchan Aruch is Ebenezer, siman Yud Zayin, where they discuss all of the dinim of heter agunas, those kind of agunas. It's a long siman representing the long godless of the Jewish people. And it describes all the different gory details of finding a dead body. You can't identify then whether you think he is dead, he's not dead. That's traditionally, that was known as an aguna. We live in a generation where we have a different kind of an aguna, that the husband is alive and he's right in front of us and he refuses to give his wife a gift. So there is a little bit of a discussion in Shulchan Aruch about this. If you look in the Maariv Kodesh that were distributed, and number two, the Magen Avraham quotes a Rambam. We know the Rambam wrote a Sefer HaMitzvahs. He tried to list off what, in his opinion, are the 613 mitzvahs. The Rambam was not the first, he was not the last. The Rambam disagrees with those who preceded him about the exact details of which mitzvahs should be counted and which not. There were those who disagreed with the Rambam. So the Rambam counts as two distinct mitzvahs, one mitzvah, one aveirah, the 248 mitzvahs, I'll say, 365 mitzvahs, loises. So the Rambam counts one mitzvah, loises, and not to do melacha on Shabbos, then he counts another mitzvah, loises, and not to punish anybody on Shabbos. What do you mean not to punish anybody? The Gemara raised the possibility that Bezdin should be permitted to give the death penalty on Shabbos based on a whole series of Kal Vachomer that A is greater than B and B is greater than C, so A is greater than C. So I would have thought, based on a whole series, a whole system of priorities, that it's permissible for the Bezdin to administer the death penalty to give Mises Bezdin on Shabbos. So the Gemara learns out from a pasuk that you're not allowed to. So after you learn out from the pasuk, so the simple pshat is that it's a malacha. You're putting someone to death. To kill a fly is a malacha on Shabbos. To kill, to shef an animal is a malacha on Shabbos. So to kill a human being is certainly a malacha. I would have thought that the mitzvah of Mises Bezdin is so chomer, is so important, that it's more important than chil Shabbos. So the pasuk tells me that it's not. But once you know from the pasuk that it's not the Shabbos, so it should be prohibited because it's a malacha. So the Rambam seems to say not so. The Rambam says there's one loises and not to do malacha on Shabbos, and there's another separate loises and not to administer any punishments on Shabbos. Sounds from the Rambam, even if there's no malacha involved at all. So that's what the Magen Avraham is discussing. The second of the Maariv Kodesh is how do you deal with this Rambam? That seems to be the simple reading of the Rambam. Not to give any oinish, shelo nahanish b'Shabbos. Not to give any punishments on Shabbos. So that's why the Shulchan Aruch writes in the first of the Maariv Kodesh, you're not allowed to put anybody in prison on Shabbos. Police should lock somebody, a Jewish country, a Jewish government, a Imagine the Shas is running the government in Eretz Yisrael. The day will yet come. Mizrahi, Shas, whatever, all together. That day will come. They are good with the Mizrahi. All will all join together. Mashiach will come. They'll all join together and they'll be running the government in Eretz Yisrael. So a Jew deserves a punishment, so we're not allowed to punish him on Shabbos. We're not allowed to put somebody in Chayram on Shabbos. Chayram itself is a punishment, even though you're not doing any Chilul Shabbos. You're not allowed to punish on Shabbos. You're not allowed to put him in prison on Shabbos if the imprisonment is the punishment. We usually don't have a punishment of imprisonment. Or if we want to put him in prison in order that he shouldn't run away because we want to punish him on Sunday, also you're not allowed to imprison him on Shabbos. So Rabbi Kivega writes two comments there. Rabbi Kivega had more than one son. So he had different Shulchan Aruchs on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. He wrote his comments. So one son of his went to South Africa, to Johannesburg, and he published the Shulchan Aruch with his father's comments. So that the Johannesburg edition of the Shulchan Aruch wasn't available on the computer. So that Rabbi Kivega, they couldn't print out. So Rabbi Kivega writes on this sif that you're not allowed to imprison someone on Shabbos. What if he wants to run away from his wife and leave her on Aguna? So we want to imprison him, we want to lock him up in jail, not because we want to punish him. We want to prevent him from doing an Avera, to be nagging his wife. So Rabbi Kivega writes, he quotes Achredim, that's permissible on Shabbos. Or Rabbi Kivega number three, the other son, remained in Europe. He didn't go to South Africa, the other son remained in Europe, and he had his father's, another Shulchan Aruch of his father, Rabbi Kivega, and he published the Ksavim. Now in Eretz they published the Shulchan Aruch that has collected together all the Ha'oras of Rabbi Kivega from the two editions. From the edition that was printed in Europe and from the edition that was printed in South Africa. So the CD only had, this computer only had the Rabbi Kivegas that were printed in Europe. So in the third of the Marmukams, he quotes a Prima Godin. Let's say it's Yontif. Shabbos and Yom Tov, you're not allowed to punish anyone. You're not allowed to put someone in prison. But what if the fellow on Sukkot doesn't want to shake a lulav, and Shas is running the government, and whoever doesn't want to do a mitzvah, so we pressure him, we force him to do a mitzvah. And if he doesn't want this, we beat him up until he finally consents to do the mitzvah. On Pesach night, he doesn't want to eat matzah. So we force him to eat the matzah. And if he doesn't want to, we beat him up. So the Kivega quotes the Prima Godin, and that's not called punishing. That's not called a punishment on Shabbos. We're beating the person up, but we're locking him up in prison to prevent them from violating a mitzvah, to prevent the person from violating an aver. So that you're permitted to do on Shabbos. This is clearly obvious that there is an aver. If the couple is not living together and they don't plan to live together, there's clearly an aver not to give the wife a get. There is a din in the Mishnah in Bava Metzia, the fourth of the Marmukhaimis. The Pasuk in Chumash speaks about Oinoh means if I'm selling real estate to somebody, or I'm selling merchandise to someone, metaltalim or karka, does make a difference, and I charge an outrageous price that's way more than the value of the thing that I'm selling. Or someone is buying, and he fools the merchant into selling the item to him for less than it's really worth. It's worth way more. And he tells him, this happens all the time in New York. Well, not here, maybe it's different. New York, a family is sitting shiva, and the father had a library of 10,000 svarim that's worth a fortune of money. Then a moichas svarim comes to be Menachem Oblin, and he says, oh, what do you have value? These svarim, all the svarim together worth $500. And maybe worth thousands and thousands of dollars. And moichas svarim fools him into believing that they're all second-hand books anyway. Yeah, but they're all out of print. They're all second-hand books anyway. So he buys all these books that are falling apart for a small price. That's I know on the part of the lokeach. Oinor can be violated either by the moicher for charging too much, or Oinor can be violated by the lekeh for fooling the moicher into believing that he should sell it for less. So that's called Oinor's moment. That's the pasuk in Chumash, Losano Isha Samisa. Then the pasuk repeats itself. It says again, Losano Isha Samisa. The Gemara wonders, why is it repeated? The Gemara says that the second time it's written, it's referring to Oinor's dvorim. It means not to cause aggravation to anybody, not to play a practical joke on someone, not to cause more serious aggravation than stomach practical jokes. A husband who does want to give his wife a get, that's one of the most serious averis. The Gemara says that Kol Shari Tfilo V'Ninalu, that the Rabban Shalom doesn't listen to prayers today as well as he used to listen Bizman She Beis Amigdash HaYikayim. The Pasuk says in Echakam, Ki Ezek V'Shaveya Sosam Tfilosi, that the Beis Amigdash is not only the Mokam HaKrovis HaKorbonis, it's the Mokam Beis HaMikdash is the place we're supposed to daven, or everyone, we all face Eretz Yisrael, we all face the Beis HaMikdash when we daven. So once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, so the prayers are not accepted to the same extent that used to be accepted and answered, this bunch of Beis HaMikdash are Yekayim. So the Shari Tefillah within Alu, but the Shari I know, if a person is, someone causes me aggravation and I cry out to the Rabbanu Shalom, I'm espoused to Rabbanu Shalom that he should punish that person for aggravating me. So the Gemara says those gates are not closed. That's the worst aver that a person can possibly do, to cause aggravation to someone else. And the Gemara points out, especially as far as couples who are married, not only will husband causing aggravation to his wife ruin the marriage, but even if it doesn't ruin the marriage, it's a serious, talking, they're happily married together. Husbands are often, wives also, are not always careful with the way they speak to each other, the way they treat each other. A person has to be careful not to cause aggravation, not to be sharp-tongued against his spouse. As the Gemara has a number 5, the 5th of the Ma'amar comes, the Yom HaYodim Zorba Eino Asishto, Shemitoch Shedimosa Metsuya Eino Asa Kroivon. Person has to be careful the way he speaks to his wife. The Rambam quotes in number 6, the Rambam quotes the obligation which is formulated in the Gemara. It's not the original statement of the Rambam. This person has to show Oy Vesishta Kigufa Machabda Yasamigufa, has to love his wife. There is a mitzvah we have to the Racha Kamboicha, but the Gemara assumes that it applies to my wife more so than to someone else's wife. Each person has the meant. We have to love all the people, but not equally. You have to love your wife more than you love your mother. That's a problem by some people. They're still attached to their mothers. Unfortunately. Akayyadavis and Shavasima. It says the husband has to leave his wife, has to leave his mother in order to develop a love for his wife. And he has to love his wife, not son, this is the one that I live with, has to show much more love to his wife than to anybody else. Mechabda Yosef Migufan, he has to be mechabed his wife more than he's machbed on his own kovet. A husband who's ma'agin, his wife, a husband who's not living with his wife anyway, he refuses to give her a get. So what kind of a zoyoyimashta gufa mechabda yosef migufa is certainly in violation of both of these mitzvahs. So we have, unfortunately, a situation where we have not that many. We have husbands who refuse to give gittin to their wives. And these women today are referred to as agunas. So there were some individuals who thought that they had a simple solution to the problem. We all know there's a practice of hataras nedarim. You convene a bezin. And I took a neder, and I come to the bezin, and I explained, look, if I would have realized what kind of trouble I'm going to get into based on this neder, I would never have taken the neder. So the bezin says, we hereby declare the neder is a neder betoes, and therefore the neder is not binding at all. The bezin says, mutalach, 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 and that's it. So that's what they have in New York. You people in Baltimore, you're behind the times. In New York, that's what we have. But they did him like this. So the wife comes to the bezin and she says, in all honesty, if I would have known that this husband is not going to make a living, if I would have known this husband is going to give me such a hard time, I would never have married him. So the bezin says, we hereby declare that the kiddushin was an error. And mutalach, mutalach, mutalach. So you don't even need to get goodbye. Right? So obviously you don't have it in Baltimore because it's a joke. It's a farce. In New York, we have everything. There is no such thing. How come there's no such thing as hataras nedarim by kiddushin? Just like by neder, the Gemara says the bezin declares that the neder is a neder b'tos. If he's really telling the honest, the goodness, truth, he says if he's telling a lie, that if I would have realized what trouble I'm going to get into, I would never have taken the neder. Even if the bezin says mutalach, 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 the heter is not chal, it's not valid. But if he's telling the truth, that if he would have really realized it, if he would have known then what he knows now, that this neder is going to get him into big trouble, is going to be aggravated, he would never have taken the neder. So the bezin declares the neder is a neder b'tos. So how come it doesn't work by kiddushin? So the answer is very obvious. If I buy stocks, and the stocks go down, so I'll convene a bezin, and I'll say, honest to goodness, if I would have known the stocks are going to go down to dred, and dred alright, I would never have bought the stocks in the first place. So the bezin will say it's a kinyan b'tos. And the kinyan is not valid. So obviously, you can't do that. I buy real estate. what I buy real estate, I thought it's going to go up. And then the whole value of the real estate in the whole area goes down. So I come to the bed and I say, if I would have realized that the real estate value is going to go down, I would never have bought the real estate. So Taisu says in Baba Kama, but you don't need a Taisu in Baba Kama. You don't need a Rashi, you don't need a Gemara. Everybody understands. That's all of life is like that. You made a bad investment, so you can't go to a bez and say later on, if I would have known then what I know. What you know now is what you know now, but you knew what you knew then. You made your decision based on what you knew then when you bought the stocks and when you got married or when you bought the real estate or whatever it was. You sold the real estate and the next day it goes up. If I would have known it's going to go up, I would have never sold. No, it doesn't help. That's not called the toy. It's something that happens in the future. Doesn't affect the past to be considered the Torah. The only place where that works is by the Dorim, and by Hekdashis, and the Ziris, and the Hafloy, and Yoni Hafloy. Why? There are different levels of Das that are needed for different things. The lowest level of Das is needed for Neder. We know that a child the year before Bar Mitzvah is called the Mufla Samach Leish, a boy or a girl the year before Bar Mitzvah, who takes a neder, so the neder is binding. If they make kinyonim, it's not valid. If they get married, it's not valid. The only case where we say that a child the year before Bar Mitzvah, before Bas Mitzvah, has enough das to affect something, to make a chalois, to make something effective, is with respect to inyoni haflo, inyoni naziris, and the dorim, and so on, hakdoshes korbonis, hafroshes truma, and so on, because that's you only need a lower level of das over there. Enough das, the child, a year before Bar Mitzvah, that's called Mufla Samach Liyush, has enough das for that. By Mekuch HaMemka, by selling or buying, you need a higher level of das. By Kiddushin, the Halacha declares you need even a higher level of das than that. How do we know that by Kiddushin, one requires a higher level of das than by Mekuch HaMemka? Common sense dictates like that. That when a person is selling or buying, he needs a certain level of das, but by getting married, that's a more serious activity, so you need even a higher level of das. Which halacha do we see indicates that that's the case? So some interpret that that's the halacha in the Gemara, that when you get married, you have to have Eidim watching under the chuppah. Let's say if a man gives a ring to a girl and says, Hariyat Mekudesh asleep, and there are no witnesses watching it all, so then the Kiddushin does not take effect. The Kiddushin are not chal. So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik shows in his Sefer that some of the Rishonim, not all, this is not the accepted view, but some of the Rishonim understand the nature of that din is that when I express my das in public, that's considered a higher level of das. So by Mekach HaMemka, by buying or selling, I can express my das privately, and that's good enough. But when it comes to getting married, because the halacha requires a higher level of das, so therefore the das has to be expressed in public. Whenever you have two people and they make a deal, and they say, Beneinu lebein atzmeinu. We don't need any witnesses. If you don't have any witnesses, then the fellow can always back out later on. You won't be able to prove that you won't be able to force him to keep his word because he said, Beneinu lebein atzmeinu, there's nobody watching. When you express your das in public, there are two kosher eidim there. And they can come to Bezin and testify that that's what I agreed to, so that's a higher level of das. So that's why Kiddushin requires a higher level of das. So to say, if a person took a neder, and then a year later he gets into big trouble because of that neder, and he convenes a bezin and he says, if I would have realized at the time that I took the neder that in another year I'm going to get into such big trouble, to tell you the truth, I honestly would never have taken the neder in the first place. If I would have realized that. So that halacha, that's considered a neder b'toras, bezin declares mutalach, mutalach, mutalach. We hereby declare the neder was made in error, and the neder is not binding, and it never was binding. Even if I already violated the neder, knowingly, willingly, I'm not going to get punished. I don't get malchus because the bezin is oikar on neder meikar. They undo the whole neder by declaring that it was a neder betos. So that halacha that the bezin can undo the neder that was taken already, that's only by nyan in the dorim where you only require the lowest level of das. So since it's a lighter level of das, it can be knocked off easily. So if the Bezin later declares that if you would have realized you would never have taken the neder, that knocks off such a das. You can't knock off a das of Mekuch HaMemkar. When a person buys stocks or he buys real estate, or certainly more so if he gets married, you need even a higher level of das for that. You cannot knock off such a das by the Bezin declaring mutalach, mutalach, mutalach. That's a joke. That's a farce. It's not a joke. That's making a farce out of the halacha. That's certainly not acceptable. You know, after the First World War, there were many Jews who were missing. There were literally agunas. There were women whose husbands were lost in battle in the rabbi. No one knew whether they were alive or dead. The government didn't know. The ones in the War Department didn't know. So one of the prominent rabbanim in Europe had a suggestion that we should write a get on behalf of the husband and give the get to the wife with that. We don't know if the husband is alive or dead. So if the husband is dead, it's a stam, the woman is allowed to remarry. Sure, she's an almona. And in the event that the husband is alive and he's held prisoner or was somewhere, so it's unreasonable to expect that the husband is going to wait, the wife should wait for the husband 5 years. How long does he expect that the wife should wait? So aren't we doing a favor for the husband by giving his wife a get on his behalf? One of the rabbanim came at Rabbi Eliyahu Kalatzkin, who's a big Talmud Chacham in Europe. So he came up with such a suggestion that we should say Zochen Liyadam Shaloi Befanam. We know there's a principle of Zochen Liyadam Shaloi Befanam. I want to give a gift to someone who's not here. So I give the gift to someone who is here, he picks it up and he makes the kinyan on behalf of the other person. So Zochen Liyadam Shaloi Befanam tells us that we can, even though the person himself is not making the kinyan, someone else is making the kinyan, that's acceptable. If he would have appointed a shaliach, so the shaliach can act on his behalf, so we consider you're here, so I give you the matana. So zechiyah is as if he had made you a shaliach. And number two, but he didn't make you a shaliach. He doesn't even know that anyone is giving a matana at all. So we say the principle is, even though the person doesn't know anything about it, since it's certainly in his best interest, it's a taima for him, it's a zechiyah. Everybody wants the matana. I want to give him $100,000. So who doesn't want $100,000? So even though he didn't express his das one way or the other, doesn't even know about it, so we say Zoch Liyadam Shalei Befanav is considered as if he had granted das. So that's what one of the Rabbanim had this suggestion. If the husband is missing, doesn't the husband realize that this is an avla gedola, that his wife is unable to remarry? If the husband is a normal person, we have people who use this as a way to cause their wives aggravation. But let's say you have a normal couple. There was no problems of shalom bayis. The husband would not want to make his wife miserable. So wouldn't the husband certainly want to give his wife a get if he knows that he's stuck over here and she's over there and she can't remarry? That's terrible. So wouldn't the husband certainly want to give his wife a get? But that's what this Rav suggested, that you should say, Zochen Liyadam Shalei Befanav. We should write the get on behalf of the husband. He would certainly want this. So this opinion was never accepted. Halacha l'maaseh. Rav Herzog, who was the second chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael after Rav Kook passed away, Rav Herzog was a chief rabbi, so he has a tshuva in the collection that's called Heichal Yitzchak, the collection of tshuvas of Rav Herzog. He has a tshuva about this, and he says, "Eneni choleim afilu. I don't even dream about the possibility of following this suggestion of Rav Kalatzkin, because it's absolutely not acceptable. Why not?" So the answer is, there are different situations in halacha where we require different levels of das. We mentioned before, with respect to the hataras nedarim, that the lowest level of das is when a person takes a neder. A higher level of das than that is when a person does mekach hamemka, he's selling or buying. A higher level of das than that is kiddushin. So over here, we know that the principle of zochen liyadam shalei befanav appears in the Mishnah. So if I want to give you someone a matana, he's not here. So I give you the matana, you pick it up on his behalf. So this is a situation where he wants to be kind of matana. There's a das acheres makna, what we call it over here. I want to give the matana. If he would be here, he would be happy to receive the matana. The fellow always has the brave later on to turn down the matana. Let's say when he finds out that they accepted a gift of $100,000 for him, and he says, "I don't want any matanas. I don't like shechta. I don't want to feel indebted." So when he turns it down later on, so that cancels the whole sphere. But as long as he doesn't cancel the sphere, so we say it, he probably wants it, and it certainly is a chi on his behalf. So what level of das do you need to be mekabel matana? I want to give you a gift. Let's say you are here. I want to give you a gift, so I give you the gift. So I have das to be makna. How much das do you need? So that's a big machlokes in Rishonim, and we pass in the Shulchan Aruch that even if one is before bar mitzvah, if there's a child before bar mitzvah picks up a dov shel hefker in the street, so the Mishnah says it's only koinim in the rabbanim. It's yes chayrusha at the bekotin. It's only gezel mid the rabbanim. It's not the only mifnei darkei shalom. Why? Because the cotton is allowed by das before bar mitzvah. He doesn't have das. And in order to be koinim matana, in order to be koinim dov shel hefker, you have to have das. But to be kaina matana, the accepted opinion of Shulchan Aruch is, since if I am bar mitzvah and I have das makna, so then a katan before bar mitzvah can be kaina min haTorah. Because whenever there's das acheres makna, there's no need for das on the part of the kaina. So the only place the Mishnayos have spelled out explicitly that we apply the principle of Zochen Liyadim Shloi Bifonov is, when I want to give a matana to Pliny, who's not here, and I give it to the one who is here, he picks it up on his behalf, so the das of the one who's receiving the matana can substitute for the das of the one who's going to be carried in the matana. But you don't need such a high level of das over there. Even a child before bar mitzvah, who's al pidin ala bar das, can also receive a matana. If he's here in person, I give him the matana, he's kind of an atayro, because there's a das acheres makna over here. So that's the only case where you have in the Mishnah, is that it says, he says, zachan liyad mishloi b'fon. Let's say, I have an old gemara that I'm learning from in the Beis Medrash. My father used that gemara, it's falling apart. No special sentimental value. And if you would sell the Gemara, it's not only second hand, it's third hand, it's tenth hand, and it's falling apart. If you would sell it, it'll sell for a nickel. So some Shugana comes to the Beis Medrash. He wants to pay $100,000 for my Gemara. And I happen not to be there that day. And everybody says, we're sure Rabbi Shechter would be happy to sell you his Gemara for $100,000. I could buy myself a whole library. So would you say, Zochen Liyadim Shloi Bifonov, that they can sell my property to somebody else? That's a famous dispute in Ketzai Sachoshin and the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, because the Gemara's principle is Zochen Liyadim Shloi Bifonov. You can receive a gift on behalf of someone who's not here. What about Zochen Meyadim? You say, it's certainly a toivah to me that I should sell my Gemara, which is worth a nickel, to sell a Gemara for $100,000. There's no way, no, over here we tell a fellow that it's only worth a nickel. It's not no great value over here. The guy says he doesn't care. He has sentimental value to him. He wants to pay $100,000. I don't need the Gemara. If they leave a $100,000 bill, I might, if there is such a bill, if they leave a $100,000 bill, I might mock him in the Beis Medrash instead of the Gemara. I'll be delighted. It has no sentimental value to me, this Gemara. I'd be happy to sell the $100,000. That's a famous dispute that you say, Zochen Meyodom. Shaloi Bifon of the original Mishnah only says Zochen Liyodim, when the level of das that's needed is a lower level of das, even a cotton can be Mekabel Amaton. So then you say Zochen. Do you say Zochen in a situation where they're going to sell my Gemara? That's a famous dispute. So even if one should assume that yes, there's a further question. Do you say Zochen Liyodim Shaloi Bifon of to get married? Let's say we know that this boy is chalashing to marry the girl. And the boy's chasing after the girl all the time. And then the girl never agrees. Finally, when the day the girl agrees, the boy is not here. The girl is finally in the mood to get married. The boy is not around to be mikdash the girl. So can anyone give a ring to the girl and say, Harei mikdash is to Pliny, because we know that Pliny is chalashing to get married to you already. But the chosen bacha, the Pliny, never appointed anybody as a shaliach. If he appoints a shliach, so shliach can give the kiddushin to the isha, which mekadosh bo b'shlucha. He never appointed any shliach. He thought he's going to be able to convince the girl in person that she should marry him. So that's a famous dispute in kiddushin. Even if you say zochen meyadam, even if you say that zochen can substitute, we need real das also, not just to be mekabel amatana. You say zochen meyadam shlucha. Even to sell something, you can say zochen. But by kiddushin, you need a higher level of das. Then by kiddushin you need a higher level of das than by mekach hamemka. As we mentioned earlier, the Rav Chaim Soloveitchik pointed out you need edus lekiyum hadavar. So that's a further machlekes in the Rosh. So even if one should assume that you say zochen liyadim shloi b'fanav even by kiddushin, that's two opinions in the Rosh in Maseches Kiddushin. It's a Gemara, two ways to interpret the Gemara. But to write a get on behalf of a husband, that's highly questionable. We assume, that's what we'll soon discuss in another minute, we assume in order to give a get to one's wife, you need even a higher level of das than to get married. And Metzias it so, when a person makes up his mind he's going to get married, he's more serious than at the time that he does Mekach HaMemka. You need a higher level of das al pidin to get married than to do Mekach HaMemka. And then to make up your mind that you're going to get divorced, that even... that needs more yeshiva das than the yeshiva das that's needed to decide to get married. So the Poskim point out, Rav Chaim and others point out, that the level of das that's needed to give a get is even a higher level of das than is needed to get married. So that's why Rav Kalatskin's suggestion was never accepted, halacha l'maaseh. The Rabbanim thought that it's just not correct. There's a limit how far you can say zochen liyadim shloi b'fanav. You say Zochen Liyadim Shloi B'fanav by receiving a matan on behalf of someone else, that's the lowest level of das. To give a matan is a question, to be mekadesh an isha is a question, but to go so far to say zochen le'adam shlei b'fanav, to give a get on behalf of the husband, that's the best, that's the, in the best interest of the husband, that far we certainly don't accept. There happens to be an individual in Rehovot who's dealing with the Agunas in Eretz Yisrael. They have, right after Hakamas HaMedina, 1948, there were a couple of husbands who didn't want to give their wives gittin. So the rabban had put them in prison. So it's a long time already. So all of those husbands, by now, have already given gittin or drafted. One way or the other, they died in prison. So there, as of a couple of years ago, there were still a few mishugoyim who were sitting in prison. They refused to give their wives gittin. So this character in Rehovot, I don't even think he's a rabbi. They came to Dr. Lamb. They asked Dr. Lamb to officially revoke the fellow smicha. So Dr. Lamb said he never got smicha from YU. We're not the balabat, and YU is not the balabas to revoke the smicha. If he got smicha from our yeshiva, he'll consider revoking the smicha. But he didn't get smicha from our yeshiva. We don't know if he got any smicha at all. He's not in the field of rabbinical work there. He's not in the chinuch or anything. He's in a different field, some scientific field there. So this fellow was relying on this kula of Rabbi Leo Kalatskin that he says, Zochalam Shlei B'fanav. And then he combined also with that a Rashbo. There's a Rashbo in Kiddushin in the first parak that sometimes he can say, Zochalam Shlei B'fanav, Shlei B'fanav, Bal Korcho Shalodim, even against his wishes. So the Rashbo suggests like that, that if you, I want to give a Shtashirchu to my Eved Kenayni, see if the Eved Kenayni is here, I can give him the Shtashirchu Bal Korcho. It's Mishnais like that. What if the Eved Kenayni is not here? So I'll give the Shtashirchu to someone else to be Zoich on behalf of the Eved Kenayni. So that's a question in the Mishnah. And we pask him that that's considered a case of Zochen Le'adam Shlei B'fanav. So you can give the Shtashirchu to someone representing the Eved, even though we didn't consult the Eved. What if we consult the Eved and he says later on, no, I'd rather remain an Eved. So all the Rishonim say that the Shtashirchu is not valid. Whenever you do an act of Zochen on behalf of someone else, and the fellow later on finds out that he did him a favor, and he says, no, thank you, I don't want it. So he undoes the whole act of Sri. That's how the Gemara says. So the Rashba says, Lule the Mistafin, if he weren't afraid to argue with the Rambam and the Rif and all the other Rishonim, he would have said that by Shtashirchu, since it's an absolute schus gemura, it's an absolute schus, there's no reason in the world that it doesn't make sense at all that the Yevit should refuse the taiva that was done on his behalf. So the Rashba has his suggestion that maybe Zochen works even Bal Korach of the Yevit. So this character in Rehovot was writing Gittin based on Zochen Le'adam Shlei B'fanav, against the husband was sitting in prison for not having given a get. And if he would give the get, then Eretz Yisrael they would put him in prison, because it's against the law to go against the Rabbanut. So he does the get in the American embassy. If you do the get in the American embassy, so the Israeli government can't punish you. It's not against the American law. You can do whatever you want. It's against the Israeli law to do anything against the Rabbanut in the area of Gittin. So he gives the get in the American embassy. Not so crazy. So Meshuganim, he's not so crazy. He knows how not to sit in prison. So he writes a get against the good wishes of the husband and he gives a get to the woman. He says she's allowed to be married. Why? Because Zochen Le'adam Shlei B'fanav, like Rav Kalatskin said in Europe, and Zochen works even Bal Korcho. Yeah. The whole thing is a joke. Rav Kalatskin's cheshbon was never accepted by the Rabbanim, and even if it would have been accepted, it wouldn't apply, you wouldn't say Bal Korcho Shalodim. The Rashba says explicitly that Zohan only works Bal Korcho by Yishtashichu, because the Yishtashichu itself can be given Bal Korcho if the Eved would be here. The Yodan can give the Yishtashichu to the Eved against his wishes. But a get cannot be given against the wishes of the husband when the husband and the wife are here. So here the Rashba himself would never say it. That's what Rav Herzog writes in his Tshuva. He says, "Eneni cholem afilo. I would never even dream of following Rav Kalatskin's suggestion." And you know, the next thing that's going to happen is Rav Herzog writes, the former chief rabbi says, the next thing that's going to happen is that some wise guy is going to decide to give a get against the wishes of the husband and apply Rav Kalatskin's klal to say that Zochen even works Bal Korcho, because exactly that's exactly what this fellow does in Rehovot. It's totally incorrect. So I just wanted to point out in Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef is a commentary on the Tur that's written by Rabbi Yosef Karo. So in the Beis Yosef, he quotes the following shaila. Let's say there's a couple in the holding by getting divorced, and they forced the husband, they threatened to kill the husband unless he gives a get. Happily married couple, there's no problem. A stranger comes in. Happily married. A stranger comes in and he threatens to kill the husband unless he gives his wife a get. I'm sugar. So the husband gives a get, he doesn't want to lose his life. So the dinner said the get is not valid. The get has to be given out of his own free will. Anything like that. Let's say, you threatened to kill me unless, whatever, unless I give you my house for a dollar. So I give you, I don't want to lose my life, so I give you my house for a dollar. So the dinner is, the mecher is not valid. It's a bal korchoi. So get has to be given me das habal. That's obvious, that's elementary. So the shad is the following. What if the husband, let's say the husband and the wife had a dispute, and the wife says she'd like to get divorced. So the husband swears to her that he's going to give her a get. Or he shakes her hand. He promises with a tkiyas kaf. We assume that one promises with a tkiyas kaf, that has the status of a shvur. The husband swears he gives a tkiyas kaf that he's going to give her a get. No one forced the husband into swearing that he's going to give her a get. No one threatened him. No one forced him into giving a tkiyas kaf. He did it out of his own free will. So there's a dispute in the Rishayim. Is that called the get bal korchai? So the Beis Yosef in his commentary, Rabbi Yosef Kar, in his commentary on the tour, quotes the Ritva, who says that that's considered the get bal korchai, and that's the opinion that he quotes in Shulchan Aruch. A chumrah, unbelievable. He quotes at Shulchan Aruch and Shulchan Aruch that if the husband took a shvur, took a tkiyas kaf to give his wife a get, even though he took the shvur out of his own free will, no one forced him into it. The girl says, father-in-law didn't threaten him, didn't pressure him. The husband swore to his wife, he's going to give her a get. So when he gives a get, that's called the get bal korchai. It's very strange. And then there's a further dispute. What if the husband didn't take a shvur that he's going to give his wife a get? He obligated himself. He said, if the wife is interested in getting divorced, so the husband says, I will give you, I doesn't take a shvur, but he says, I'll give you a get, don't worry. He makes a legally binding contract with his wife. If I don't give you the get by a certain day, I'll give you $100,000. And then he gives the get before that date. So that's a machlokes, that's a further chumrah. Maybe that's also called the get bal korchai. Maybe what motivated him to give the wife the get is because he does want to lose the $100,000. He really has a choice not to give her the get, but then he'll have to, not like a shvur. If he took a shvur, he's going to give his wife a get. So he obligated himself to give her a get. So that's the Ritva says, that's called the get bal korchai. But this is already a step further than the Ritva. He never really obligated himself with a shvur to give a get. He just said, if I don't give you a get by 2 months, I obligate myself to give you $100,000. Hata breira, not to give the get, but to pay the money. So we're further machmed to treat that also as a get bal korchai. It's a big chumr. That's a tremendous chumr. Lamaisa, in Europe, there was a common practice for many generations that when a couple would get engaged, they would sign tanoim. What is tanoim all about? So tanoim is exactly that. They promise to marry each other. In the event that I back out, I promise to pay you $100,000. And if I don't pay the money, my rich uncle is going to back me up. He's going to pay the money. And the girl promises that she's going to marry me. And if she does marry me by a reasonable date, we write in the time when we plan to get married, then her father will pay a penalty because his daughter is backing out from the shidduch. And if the father doesn't have the money to pay, so the rich uncle on the girl side is going to back up, going to serve as the orif to pay the $100,000 to the boy for backing out. So the ma'aseh, that's what we always did. That's what people did for generations. They always made it tanoim. So the Pischi Tshuva, number 10 of the Marmikaim, is the Pischi Tshuva Ois Ches, quotes this kasha from the Sefer Yeshuas Yankov. Yeshuas Yankov is a running commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. So he asked this kasha, if by a get, if you ever saw a Seder Aget, when a couple is holding by getting divorced, so the first thing you have to ask the husband, the bezin, ask the husband, did you ever take a shvua, did you ever shake hands with your wife to obligate yourself to give your wife a get? So he says, he never took a shvur. So the Bezin says, in case you did take a shvur, in case you did shake your wife's hand and promise her that you're going to give her a get, do you want us to make a hataras nedarim for you? So the husband says, yes, make me hataras nedarim. So they say, mutalach, mutalach, mutalach. The matan neder on the shvur that he may have possibly taken, in case he took a shvur, to give a get. And only then, after making the hataras nedarim, the husband is free, then we proceed to give the get. So the kasha is, but whenever you get married, the boy and the girl promise to marry each other, and each one accepted upon himself as a knas mamon that if they're going to back out from the shidduch, they're going to pay a penalty. So how do you ever do that? Should it come out that gidushin is gidushin bal korchai? If by get we consider that a get bal kocha, so why don't we say that by kiddushin should also be considered a kiddushin bal kocha? This is the kasha that the Shuas Yankiv asks. So in the yeshivas they say the teretz. It appears in the Sfarim in Europe. They write like this. The Chelkas Yoyev writes like this in his style. In the yeshivas they say the same thing slightly differently. We worked out before different levels of das. The lowest level of das is by midorim. That even a child the year before bas mitzvah has enough das to take a neder. So because the das that's needed for a neder is a lower level of das, so that's why that das can be knocked off easier. You can make a hataras nedarim. The bezin can declare, if it's really true, you would have realized then what you know now, you wouldn't have taken a neder. So we hereby declare that it's a neder b'tor. So that easy way to brush off a neder to make a hataras nedarim only works by this. By the lowest level of das. It doesn't work for any situation where you need any higher level of das. So we worked out there are different levels of das. By Nidorm is the lowest level of das. Then by Mekach and Memker is a higher level of das. And by Kiddushin is a higher level of das. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik points out that by Gittin we require Al Pidin, not only psychologically, it needs more Yishev Adas to decide to get divorced and then the decision to get married, which is certainly true. But Al Pidin, the halacha requires a higher level of das for a get than is needed for a kiddushin. So even though by a kiddushin, even though by a get we're machmir, that if the husband ever took a shvua that he's going to give his wife a get, or he made a tkiyas kaf, he shook hands, and that's the equivalent of a shvua, that the tkiyas kaf is considered like a krisis bris. So even though if the husband took a shvua, that's considered a get bal korcha, that's only a chumrah, that we only consider that bal korcha by get. Because get needs the highest level of das. But by kiddushin, and certainly by the lower cases, by kiddushin where you don't need such a high level of das as you need by gittin, that doesn't pose a problem. That's not considered a kiddushin bal korcha. So that's why the practice always was for generations, that people would enter into an agreement of a tenoyim, and which means that they promise to marry each other, even taking a shvua to marry each other, and even taking a knas moment, if I don't marry you by a certain date, I'll pay a certain penalty. And even though by a get, we would be machmer that a knas moment makes the get into a get bal kocha, by kiddushin we're not machmer. It's only by get. So therefore, the easy solution to all the cases is not so easy. You see, by our brothers, the Satmar, they have a very easy solution. Whenever you have a husband who doesn't want to give a get, so very easy. They take the guy for a ride to the cemetery. They show him a lot of dead people over here. There's an empty grave, there's a place for a grave over there. We can bury you over there. Keep in mind, we mean it. And they drive him home, they leave him home. And they say, make sure you give your wife a get within a reasonable amount of time, or you're going to be buried in the cemetery. So the din is, if you threaten to kill a person unless he gives a get, that's for sure a get bal kocha. Even if the person took a shvua on his own, we never forced him into anything. If he took a shvua that he's going to give a get, we are machmir and shulchan aruch, that's called a get bal korchai. So all of these things are considered a get bal korchai. Now, in the Mishnais, you have certain cases where the bezin can bludgeon a person, they can beat him up till he agrees to give the get until he drops dead. Yeah, those are cases where the halacha says, the Mishnais say explicitly that there are cases where it's kaifan oisa lagarish. A lot of times Allah says the bezin has the right to force the man to give a gift. And then we don't need satman. Then the non-satman can also threaten to kill a guy. Allah said that we have to do in such a case that we won't get arrested by the police. Okay. But we can threaten, we can use whatever is at our disposal to pressure the person to give a gift. But the Gemara doesn't say in so many cases, kofen also the garish. Many of the cases where the women are agunas, a lot of the cases it's the woman's own fault. She ruined the marriage. Sometimes. Sometimes she's at fault in a situation where it's her fault. Now, bottom line, he's at fault. Now, he doesn't want to give her a gift. Yeah, but in such a situation, the din will not always say kofen oso lagarish. Whenever it's kofen oso lagarish, whenever the bezin has the right and the obligation to pressure the husband to give his wife a gift, the bezin has the right to use whatever threats they have at their disposal. It's a shaylof and a get bal korcha, he had to get around that. So the Rambam in the last of the Marmikaim is number 15. The Rambam quotes the explanation that the Gemara gives. There's a legal explanation to explain why that doesn't pose a problem of a get bal kocha. But the problem is in many of the cases that we're dealing with, the Gemara does not say kofen osa lagarish. What you have is the Rambam quotes from the Gaonim here, number 7 of the Marmikaim. The Rama has a case, what if a woman refuses to live with her husband? The woman says, I don't love my husband anymore. I can't stand living with him. I want that he should give me a get. So the Rambam says, Kofen also lahotzi lefi she'enek ishvuya shabal. There's a misprint over here. Yeah, there's an aleph missing there. A Jewish woman who's married is not like a prisoner of war, that the husband has the right to keep her forever. If the woman says, I don't love you anymore, I want to get divorced, so the bezin will be kai for the husband to give a get. So that psak that the Rambam writes doesn't appear in the Gemara. That was added on in the days of the Gaonim, before the days of the Rambam, after the days of the Gemara. So that's a question whether we follow that psak. So the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam in the Shulchan Aruch says, in number 13, in the Maamar Mikayim is number 13, the Shulchan Aruch says, Kol Eilu Shomru Kofen Oso Lahotzi, whenever it says in the Gemara that we force the husband to give a get, Kofen Afilu B'Shotim, we take sticks and we beat him up and we'll bludgeon him to death if need be. And we'll warn him, either she'll become a grusha or she'll become an almana. Either you give the get and she'll be a grusha, or we'll beat you up till you'll drop dead. You have a right to do that. And the Rambam explains why. Number 15, why it's okay. But the question is, what if it's the Yesh Omrim, but some say, what if it's a situation where the Gemara doesn't say explicitly Kofen Oso LeGaresh, it's just the Gaonim said like that. The wife says, Moris Alai, I can't stand him anymore, I don't want to live with my husband anymore. So the Rambam quotes from the Gaonim, then in such a case, it's Kofen Oso LeGaresh. But since it doesn't say in the Gemara, the Yesh Omrim, Shekom Yishavanem above the Gemara, the Feirish Kofen Lahotzi in number 13, it just says in the Gemara, he should give a get, but it doesn't say Kofen. So then, we are Machmer, ain't Kofen Bishot, you're not allowed to beat him up, but you just tell him, Chachomim Chivucha Lahotzi, the rabbis insist you have to give a get. Yeah, but that's not going to get you too far. So we are Machmer like that. So the practice for many generations was to follow the Rabbein and Tam. The Ramah there in the Shulchan Aruch says, we're not allowed to take him to the cemetery, not allowed to threaten we're going to kill him, and not allowed to put him in cherem. If you put him in cherem, that's the equivalent of killing him. That you're not allowed to do that. But what you are allowed to do is tell all of the business associates that he has, no one should associate with him, no one should do any business with him, you shouldn't let him get any aliyas and shul, nothing. You cut him off from everything, hakol bakol mikol kol, you cut him off from everything, so you'll be choking him. And then you notify all the communities, all the nearby communities, and no, you've got to put them out of business, so of course he's going to have to give again. So that was the practice for many years. But then the later pasukim say that we don't do that either. Number 14, the Pesachei Tshuva quotes from the Sefer Gevuras Hanoshim, from the Marival, the Hoidna, that's called the Harchokas of the Rabbeinu Tam. The Harchokas of the Rabbeinu Tam means that everybody in the community should ostracize him. So it's assumed the Harchokas of the Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam instituted that. We treat that chashuv as kinida. We treat that as if we had put the man in cherem. Just like putting the person in cherem, that's considered like threatening to kill him. That would be considered a get bal korchai. So we don't do that anymore. So we are machmer for that. We wouldn't do the harchokas of the rabbin and tam. So the only what we do today is less than that. Harchokas of rabbin and tam means he cut him off. Mamish, he doesn't make a living at all. So that we don't do. So what we do is, we talk ourselves blue. We talk to the belt till we turn blue to explain to him that he's doing wrong. We have a protest rally in front of his home that he's doing wrong. So the whole, he'll be embarrassed from the neighborhood. He's still making a living. He's still making a panosa. The rabbanim can insist we're not going to give him aliyahs. He can live without the aliyahs. It's not like cutting off the whole panosa. No one's going to talk to him at all. We've got to cut him off. No one's going to talk to him. No one's going to associate in business. So that's too much. That's for the minigis we don't do. We follow the Pesachei Tshuva. That's too much. But we don't, in many instances, we'll stop the davening. We won't allow the person to daven in shul. All the shuls will make up, we won't let him daven. It depends if he's not a religious person, it's not going to help. Or if he's a real tzedreita, so he'll make his own in. He'll make himself a rabbi and make his own in. Sure. Or he doesn't care about davening in shul. So a lot of times it's not going to help. So you make protest rallies and so on. You do the best you can. But if you're going to have too much of a kfiya, so then that would only, if you have too much of a kviyah, then sometimes it's considered a get bal kocha, unless it's a situation where it says b'feirush in the Gemara, the kofen osa lahotzi. If it's kofen osa lahotzi, then you can do whatever you need. So, many situations, the bezdin will make a psak, that kofen lagarish, kofen osa lahotzi. So then you can use any form of pressure, and it's not considered a get bal korchai. That's what the Rambam wrote, number 15. The Rambam is quoting from the Gemara. But the Bezen has to judge in each and every individual situation, is this a case where the Gemara says kofanot salahotzi and everything can be used? Or it's only a case where the Gaonim said, the wife said she doesn't want to live with him anymore. So the Gaonim said kofanot salahotzi. So in those cases, we don't permit the extreme forms of the kviyah. But it certainly is an avera. It's a serious avera for a husband to refuse to give a get to his wife in an unreasonable situation. Sometimes the husbands are so sedate, they don't realize they're being unreasonable. So the rabbonim in the community have to explain to them they're being absolutely unreasonable, and the refusal to give a get is considered a serious avera. It's a serious avera of Ainoaz Dvorim. And that's a clear violation of the obligation that every husband has towards his wife. As long as he's married to his wife, he has to be gufa. The din is that the husband has to consult his wife whenever he makes any decisions. What kind of consulting his wife? He doesn't want to give her a get. He's supposed to consult his wife on everything that's related to his wife, not on business investments. That's his part of that he has to take care of. But anything, any joint venture, he has to consult his wife before he makes any decisions. It's a serious situation, and we're trying the best we can, and obviously we didn't try enough. We have to try a little more. I thank you very much. Questions, for sure. If it still lasts a little longer, we will have to do that. The question, everybody heard the question. Since in the Shulchan Aruch it says the practice was for generations that they followed the harchokas of the Rabbeinu Tam. They got the whole community to boycott this fellow. No one dealt in business with them. They choked them. They choked until they gave a get. So since they didn't put him a cherem and we didn't threaten to kill him, so that's not considered a get bal korcha. So he's asking, even though the later poskim say that we don't do that anymore, we consider that bal korcha. But meikar adin, you see that it's mutter. So if you're dealing with a situation with chilas shem, so why don't we just follow the practice that was followed for so many generations? So I just say, if we won't be able to stop
it.
Right, right. You're absolutely right. If we won't be able to solve the problem in a peaceful fashion, we will have no choice. We'll have to go back to the way it was practiced for many centuries.
Why would it be so important? It depends whether the Mishnah says koyfin or the logic says koyfin. If there's basically a matzav of koyfin, but it's not called get bal korcha, why can't we, in our own humble judgment, say this is a necessity?
Well, a lot of times it's the fault of the wife. The wife decided, the wife fell in love with him, then the wife fell out of love. So if the wife fell out of love, she says, Moistihu, Moisalai. So then it doesn't make sense to say that it should be koyfin. So this is the Goinim. The Goinim said, a new takana. The Goinim made a new takana that it's koyfin also the garbage in such a case. And the Rambam quotes the Goinim. So the Shulchan Aruch says, we don't follow that. We don't follow that kaifin. We are machmer against that. But if we'll have situations where we simply won't be able to solve it otherwise, then we'll have no choice.
So I mean, in the philosophical sense, if by the it says kaifin, it's not called gesval kofor, why is it that when it doesn't say, and we create a kaifin, it isn't a kofor? I mean to say, when the rabbis say kaifin, it takes away the divisive problem of gesval kofor.
Yes, so the Gemara explains why. The Rambam, in the last of the Maritana, the Rambam quotes the Gemara. Why not? Because the din really requires that he should give a get, and every Jewish person deep down in his heart wants to follow what the din says. And it's only a pseudo-personality. He's not really acting. He's not acting normally when he says he doesn't want to give a get.
That area can be broadened just a little bit and say the situation requires that we have to do koyfin.
That's what the Gaonim said. Exactly. That you, what you're saying, you're from the Gaonim. So the Gaonim said like that. So if we'll have situations, we'll see there's no way to solve the problem, we will go back, we will decide to go back to the original Pesach. Okay? Most of the cases in New York, most of the cases that if we have a group of boys in the yeshiva who work on these gittin, college students, undergraduate students, tzniches students, most of the cases are solved peacefully. Most of the cases, they don't even have to make any public demonstrations. They just talk to the husband, they talk and they talk and they talk and they talk to the lawyers. And by talking, 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 they convince them that they should give a get. They threaten they're going to make a demonstration. Just the threat alone of being publicly humiliated accomplishes the trick. Then, no, to talk, to explain that they're doing wrong. No, that's not cool code. No. If you have everybody ostracize him, and no one deals in business with him, so that's the Rabbi Natan said that's not kaifin either. Some Shanim said it's permissible to put him in chayrim also. That's not good. The only thing that's called balkoch is to threaten to kill him. That's called balkoch. But if you mafsid him money, or if you put him in chayrim, so many Shanim said that's not called kfiya. He has a choice to lose the money. But to humiliate him, to threaten to humiliate him, no, that says Shulchan Aruch that you should do. You should threaten to humiliate him, or you should humiliate him, yeah.
Do we say Clayton when the husband demands a ransom?
Yeah, it's unreasonable. I mean, it depends what the situation is. In some cases, you say Clayton Lagarej because the husband is at fault for not giving his wife a gift. Sometimes when the wife is at fault and the husband wants ransom money, so you wouldn't say Clayton. It's a mere thing that he's doing. So the guy wouldn't say in such a case, if the wife says, I don't want to live with him anymore, she says, Moi is a lie, I can't stand him. So he has to give the get. It would be kosher. But we don't follow those guys. That's what they mentioned before. We don't follow the guy's opinion.
But if he wants his children, of course, like against the law, against Allah,
he wants
his children not to be with his wife, so
then we do say kosher
on that also?
The Allah says the same as the secular law. The children, which of the parents has custody of the children? So the halacha says it depends whatever is best for the children. So the halacha usually assumes that up until the age of 5 it's best for the children that they should be by the mother, and after the age of 5 it's best that the daughter should be by the mother, the son should be by the father. Unless you ascertain that that's not so. So that's what the court says, the same thing. The court says the same. Whatever is in the best interest of the children. And then the Gemara says, a whole system, what's probably in the best interest of the children? But often that's absolutely not the case. Often the husband is a meshugana, so we wouldn't want even the sons to be by him. Or often the wife is the meshugana. Often they're both meshugana. So we should give the children up for adoption to a third person. Neither should have custody of the children. But basically, the halacha says the same as the secular courts. There are two prenuptial agreements that are both very valuable. The first one is when a couple has problems in the marriage, so they're going to go to a beis din to determine whether they should get divorced, dividing the property, and so on. So the first prenuptial agreement simply is they agree now that they're lovey-dovey, they're hoping they're getting married, they're talking to each other, they love each other, so they just agree now which beis din they'll go to. Often what happens is that when the marriage is on the rocks and they're not talking to each other, it takes 3 years till they determine which bed they're going to go to. And whichever bed they're going to go to is going to say the same thing anyway. So what are they wasting so much time? So that's a very innocuous prenuptial agreement. They just agree now in advance which bed will have jurisdiction over the case in case there'll be a sikh later on. That there should be any shaila about that. Then there's a second prenuptial agreement. That in the event that that bezin that they chose will determine that the husband is not acting properly by withholding a get from his wife within a certain amount of time, so then the husband is already saying now in advance he's obligating himself not $1 million a week, some outrageous amount of money. He's obligating himself now, kozman that he's married to his wife, the baal is chay b'mizonis ishtay, he's mechuyev to spend money on his wife. He's mechuyev to buy clothing and to give her an apartment to live in and to buy food for her and so on. So he obligates himself to give his wife. So there are different levels of giving your wife food and clothing. So some people give their wives the bare minimum. They can't afford more. And other people give their wives more than that. So the husband should obligate himself now, in the event that the Bezin will say that he's acting improperly, he should obligate himself to give his wife a certain amount of mezainis that will encourage him not to dilly-dally. He should give the get in a reasonable amount of time. So some Rabbanim who were not familiar with the Svarim and Achrayim, some Rabbanim were not that learned. They know other areas of Allah. Those who are not familiar with this area, they thought there's something wrong with this. This was practiced centuries ago. This was always practiced in Rabbanim. You have the text of these prenuptial agreements printed in Nachla Shiva. They used to use this centuries ago. So they always agreed these kind of things. Then in recent generations, it wasn't necessary. The Jewish community was so strong in Europe, they were all held together. So if the husband had to give a get, so there was no way he said, so they would give the get. Now, unfortunately, we don't have a strong Jewish community to pressure the husband to give a get. So you go back to the old system. So you go back to these prenuptial agreements. So those are the two. So one of the prenuptial agreements, there's nothing to argue about. That they agree already in advance which bezin will have jurisdiction over the case. And the second one, some Rabbanim brought up issues because because they simply were not familiar with the fact that this was always the practice. And it's not that it's not an issue of asmachta. Those who know Gemara, there's an issue of asmachta lokanya. If a person obligates himself an amount of money on a condition thinking that it's never going to happen, he says, in case I withhold the get from my wife, he loves the girl now, they're engaged, they're going to get married in another month. What do you mean he's going to withhold the get? He loves it, it's never going to happen. So he's obligating himself an amount of money, ala tanai, on a condition, thinking that this condition will never come to fruition, it's never going to happen. So if he accepts upon himself an outrageous amount of money, he's going to obligate himself to give $1 million a week. So we would pass in such a case, asmachta lokanya. But he's not obligating an outrageous amount of money. He's obligating himself to give mezainis. He says mezainis, $300 a week, $500, $1,000 a week. By Gvirin, they spend more than $1,000 a week on their wives. It's not that outrageous. So if you write down an amount of money that will encourage the husband to give in the case, in the event that he should be unreasonable, the bezin that they chose will declare that he's being unreasonable, not giving the get, then the husband obligates himself to give this amount of money. So the truth of the matter is I understand it was never tested in the secular courts. So it's a question whether the courts would honor this prenuptial agreement or not. But then a few cases when it came up, it didn't yet go to court. A few cases that it came up, the husbands realized that they may have to pay in courts. So they hustled to give the get. They shook a leg to give a get within a reasonable amount of time. Yeah? We would encourage everyone to fill out a prenuptial agreement. I have 9 children. So the first couple of children got married before Kodim Bria's Oilam, before they had prenuptial agreement. I got married Kodim Bria's Oilam. There were no prenuptial agreements. The last couple of children got married, so I encouraged them they should have prenuptial agreement. One of my children got married to a very wealthy girl, so I told Mechotonim that I think they should make a prenuptial agreement. So they said, they don't think they need it. They don't think that if my son will give their daughter any difficulty with respect to the giving a get, they know that they'll be able to pressure me. I'm a public figure. So they don't want a prenuptial agreement. Okay? They don't want, they don't want. They don't think that they need it to protect their daughter. But it's a good idea. Under normal circumstances, everyone should have a prenuptial agreement. Very good idea.
The prenuptial agreement, to be like the Kiddushin of Freya, would that have any amount of validity?
No. We assume whenever the couple is living together, a man marries a girl a la Tanai, and then the Tanai falls through. But then later on, they're living together. So the fact that they're living together, that itself has taken eight on the most of Bilosabilas. People don't want to live in sin. So the fact that they're living together, that itself is taken as an indication that they were both Moichel on the Tanai, that they want the Kiddushin to take effect even if the Tanai will fall through. It's not going to help. They're living together for 5 years and they've made Ala Tanai. The marriage should only take effect Ala Tanai. That is going to act within reason later on. If he'll ever be Ma'agin her, then it should be the Kiddushin is never helped. But they were living together all along. So then we assume in Shulchan Aruch that such a Tanai is not valid.
We'll take one more question. We should have a little bit of time after the show if people want to stay, but we'll take one more couple questions. Someone on the side of the room, if you want to ask a question? Okay, we'll go back to the side. Okay, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.